episode 578 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and glad I made it on time. I was having a little trouble picking out my cufflinks.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and it turns out it's always good to know an extra language or two.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would eat the burger, guys. Just it's out of this world, but not in the way you think. All right, we are going to be wrapping up this week's material, but we're still in the top three. We only got through the number three slot last time, but it was Game of Thrones, and we're like, you know, we're ramping up towards the end of that season, so of course, a lot of discussion to be had. But we are going to get right back into our top three before we then go on to the kind of middle range shows. Again, this was a good week. All the shows that we're going to talk about in this particular episode and scored eight or above, so all above average fare. All definitely worthy of discussion. But before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could.
Absolutely. We will talk about just about anything that might have happened on these episodes, so you will be spoiled. But we always try and wait a week or 10 days or so before we do that to you.
That's right, we do. And we are going to then jump into our number two show for the week. And that would be, Edmund, if you don't mind?
Turn, which is Season 2, Episode 8, Providence. Caleb sails a one-man submersible into New York Harbor. France becomes an ally to America. Andre and Peggy plot to elope.
That's interesting. Okay, so we have... Yes, that last one was probably the subplot that everybody was most interested in if you're a Ksenia Solo fan.
Yes.
Because, that shift and firelight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good combination. We definitely have a better look at her than we probably had even in Lost Girl. But anyhow, this show has actually been really doing well this season. I mean, we're only two episodes away from the finale, if I recall correctly. But the balance between the increased presence of Washington and all of the kind of politics of the colonial army and the more intimate situation with Abe and his family. Abe has not actually been in the last two episodes, really.
Yes.
He's kind of just been there, like in prison.
In prison. So yes. Everybody plotting around him. But
yeah. So it's been kind of fun watching that play out. You actually gave this a higher score than I did. I gave it an 8, and you gave it an 8.5.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, in terms of the balance they've had in the different plot lines, but as well, sort of the way things were advancing, both in terms of the whole wind up of Simcoe and Bern Gorman's character, whose name is escaping me right now.
I wanted to bring that up because that showdown at the end of the episode was great. Yeah. And I went, yeah, that showdown between Simcoe and I lost it too. It's yes. Like, I can't remember his name, but damn, was that a good scene.
Yeah. And just in general, I mean, the way they played all of that out showing us the attack and him, thinking he had killed him. And, what I loved was the whole thing of the way they've been playing with the politics and the machinations so that, you know, yes, they confront each other, but it's not just a, you know, drag down fight of, oh, you tried to kill me, et cetera. It's like, you know, no, you know, they're both aware of what they can and can't admit, so it's, you know, it's still all sort of, you know, like all running just below the surface. And I just thought it was really nicely plotted out and played. And certainly, you know, I mean Simcoe, I mean, it's just, you know, has just turned into such a well done villain. Yes, he's over the top, but they're still managing to keep it sort of believable and realistic as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny because they've done so much to mess with the historical timeline on this, but Simcoe actually, as it turns out, really was a bit of a villain. So, okay.
Yeah, and I also did love, I mean, because, you know, I've noticed in the credits from the first season that they kept showing that little image of the turtle, and to have it actually pop up almost literally in New York Harbor, I thought was another nice little bit of taking something historical and having a bit of fun with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If this doesn't get another season, I think this will still go out on top on pretty good terms. The ratings are not so great that I am positive of where it's going to go from here. And certainly this season was a bit of a retooling in order to bring in the colonial politics. But we'll see. I have my fingers crossed because I still kind of love this show. So, and bringing Ksenia Solo into it and knowing the history between Shippen and Arnold. Yeah, this could be very interesting towards the end of these last two episodes. And that brings us to our number one show for the week. And Gary, if you don't mind doing the recap for this one.
Absolutely. We're talking about Daredevil, Season 1, Episode 8, Shadows in the Glass. Murdoch, Foggy, and Karen's mission becomes even clearer. Meanwhile, Fisk's power play to control Hell's Kitchen spins terribly out of control.
Hmm. Yes, indeed. And this one came in at an average of 8.67. So everybody gave this one an 8 or above. Nadim going all the way to a 9.5, but Bronstein loved this one too. Lots of accolades. So this one definitely was our by far number one show. Now, Gary, you have had your issues with the depiction of the Kingpin up to this point, or I'm sorry, Wilson Fisk.
Fisk, yes. Yes. I don't think they've used that name yet.
No, they have not. But Fisk, Mr. Fisk. What were your thoughts on this episode? Because this was so heavily into his psychology.
Well, I did have some issues with the episode, but this wasn't one of them. I thought, I don't let my children watch this, not because of the violence, but because of the disturbing mental images that they put forth. And this was yet another one that sort of might actually keep you from sleeping at night just because of the horror. And when I say horror, I don't mean blood, but I mean that sort of terror, fear kind of thing. And as you see this son beat his father to death with a hammer for crying, then to have to chop the father up and take his remains out every other day. It's a true horror in the classic sense of the term, and it was very well written, executed. You could see how Wilson Fisk reached that point where he did that. I'm not saying I agree with it or you recommend it, but you could see where you could see the steps that led him up to that, and it was very well done. While obvious, it wasn't. I felt telegraphed. It was the next logical step in the progression they were going to get us there, and I thought it was really well handled, and it sort of makes you understand how he's become desensitized to all the violence that he causes or himself or makes others commit in his name. So it all fit together very well for the Fisk sort of mental image there. So I thought they did a really good job presenting it.
Mm. Evan, how about you? What are your thoughts on this episode?
I really enjoyed, but as Gary said, given the material, I mean, no, it's not necessarily a case of regular enjoyment, but I let's say I appreciated the delving into the Fisk backstory and the way they built up that tension and led us to horrific moment. One thing I particularly liked was as well the way they were using the wardrobe scenes of Fisk preparing himself the contrast between the one at the beginning when he's picking out these same dark clothes that he always wears those same cufflinks from his dad but then by the end of the episode the way they'd turn that around to show Vanessa's influence as then she's there and the routine is getting updated and changed and the colors are getting lighter and of course it all leading up to that moment when Trumps Ben and Matt and Karen and Foggy by actually coming out of the shadows and rendering all of that work they've been doing to try and take him down completely worthless. So I thought it was a great case of both showing us the backstory and at the same time showing how he's now starting to move beyond that.
Yeah, and this episode, I think, more than the ones that we've seen earlier, I know that there are a lot of people that, obviously have finished all 13 episodes and have already brought up the fact that Fisk, as he's being portrayed, has certain, if not fully autistic qualities, then at least on the spectrum, be it high-functioning or Asperger's or what have you. And I kind of liked the way that it was expressed in this episode where at the beginning – you saw him still locked in what is a very typical type of, you know, pattern and cycle where he got up and he had to do the same thing every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, he still had to face who he was as a child. And you saw the connection all the way through, the way that he was kind of brought to that point. And what I thought was brilliant about this was when Vanessa walks in and it's a complete shake from his routine, but it's a shake that actually makes him stronger and more formidable. And it's like the complementary way that they, it's like, a, you know, you would not, you, if you know the history of the character, you kind of knew that this was where she was going to fall in. But when they first met, he was so concerned about, I can't let you see who I really am. And it's when she finally does see it, she decides that I'm going to help you. I'm with you with this. And what that allows him to do and how much more dangerous that makes him was that whole interplay in the final act of the episode was just like, you can't take your eyes off it because of the fact that the subtle little things that they did to show that he was locked in this cycle. And if he kept on that path, there was no way he was going to be able to get out of it. But this, him breaking his routine is actually what is going to make him even harder to beat. Just all that, the way that played out was just, I loved it. And like you said, that last little thing at the end where they just about have him where they want him, and he comes out and undercuts it completely. And yeah, it was just probably, maybe not my favorite episode of the season so far, but definitely up there. I really feel like this is where you feel like they're setting up now for the big finale of the season, right? This is Fisk. He was kind of at his bottom after, you know, Matt survived and after everything happened and things with the Russians didn't quite end the way that he wanted it to. But now Fisk is back on the rise, and yeah, this is going to get interesting. It already is, but it's going to get even more interesting. Any other thoughts on Daredevil, Gary?
Just as an overall theme, I was a little disappointed that Fisk was able to turn it around and sort of thwart all of Matt's work to kind of, you know, find out who he is and get him exposed. I would have liked to seen Fisk a little off sorts and even angrier and see what he has to do when he's not so well in control.
Hmm.
So I was a little actually disappointed that they chose to go this particular route with the storyline at this point. As I alluded to in my intro, I really enjoyed the scene with the Chinese woman. I thought that was another very smartly written scene.
Hmm. Is it any surprise to you that this was written by the guy who was also in charge of Spartacus? I was like, yeah, the excessive amount of blood during the beating scene.
Spartacus showed more than blood than this, than just the opening scene.
But I was just like, you got a little bit of a shade of that here.
But you know, if they're not throwing a gallon at me in the first 3 seconds, that's not Spartacus to me.
Emotionally brutal, though. That's for sure. Just like Spartacus could be. Edmund, any last thoughts on this episode of Daredevil?
I think we have covered everything I thought I felt were major points.
Okay, well then we are going to take our mid-show break, and when we come back, we will be going through the, shall we say, middle-ranked shows of the week. Stay tuned. All right. And let's see here. We have all of four shows that were in the middle this time around, and a few of these could be actually pretty quick, such as the first one here, Bitten, Season 2, Episode 7, Bad Dreams. The Pack have things under control when the Council of Alphas reassemble at Stonehaven, but then a surprise visit from Savannah sort of puts their plans into a tailspin. Meanwhile, Nick and Paige inadvertently put a loved one in danger. Definitely a little bit of werewolf politics turns out to be quite interesting at the end of the day. Especially when decisions by main characters are not taken particularly well by other pack alphas. So, yeah, a little bit of intrigue there, but also some set up for the final couple episodes that could turn out to be very problematic. So I give this one an 8. This has been a pretty good season. Certainly has hit its stride after those first few episodes were a little rough. Edmund, if you don't mind taking the next one.
Certainly. This would be Orphan Black, Season 3, Episode 6, Certain Agony of the Battlefield. Paul is pushed into action when he discovers the ugly truth behind the Castor Boys' logbooks of names. Meanwhile, Felix becomes desperate for information on Sarah's whereabouts and presses the still ailing Rachel for any shred of a lead.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think of the kind of, finally, after 2.5 seasons, the supposed revelation of what this is all about?
I'm glad we are finally getting some of those answers, since as I've said before, as the plot has gotten more convoluted at times, I have wondered if the writers actually had anything of a plan, or if we were back in old BSG, yes, we say we have a plan, but we don't really, territory. So it was good to have some sort of explanation coming out.
Yes. That's what I kind of like about this. And if nothing else, this whole Castor thing might finally prove itself worthy if it's going to help the writers bring all this stuff to focus.
Yes.
But we'll see if this turns out to be the actual answer. It was kind of put out there as the, hey, you know, we finally are giving you the big answers that you wanted, but we'll see. I'm not so sure they won't throw us a few more curveballs about motivations and such in the meantime. We also had Salem Season 2, Episode 8, Dead Birds. Countess Marlborough's Achilles heel is revealed. Well, back then, showing a little ankle would have been a little, you know.
Well, yes.
But for this show, no, because this was probably the most sextastic episode they've ever had. That's saying something for Salem. But yes, this was kind of setting up for the finale. I couldn't find if this was a 10-episode season or 13. So that kind of confused me, because it really feels like there's only a couple episodes left.
Yeah, certainly. I certainly have enjoyed having Stephen Lang back as the ghostly Increase Mather. I really should have learned from all these Supernatural shows by now that you cast somebody like that and supposedly kill him off in the season one finale, that there's probably going to be a way around that. And certainly has been good having him back, both as a somewhat minion of Mary's, but certainly doing his best to try and be a thorn in her side at the same time. And certainly giving Cotton a few more things to worry about and chew on.
And actually, it turns out this is a 13 episode season, so according to this. So yeah, that's weird, because it really feels like it's moving into the final act here. So there must be a big twist coming that we don't see. Interesting. The things you learn. Anyhow, that also means that that kind of explains the timing of the season. Anyway, that's going to throw off our timing slightly, but that's all right, because I was wondering how we were going to talk about two seasons of a show in the same year. I guess we know now. Anyway, wrapping up then for this week. Yeah, I told you it wasn't a whole lot. iZombie, Season 1, Episode 11, Astroburger. Someone close to Major dies of an apparent suicide, so Liv consumes the victim's brains to learn more, and the result is a mix of reality and paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Clive questions Major and learns of a secret computer file that may help find the killer. Oh boy, and this one came in at, all those four shows came in at 8. So there you go, all above average. This one in particular was really quite well done with the paranoia and the mental illness, to the point where there was this just jaw-dropping thing at the end with Major that completely changes the last couple episodes of this season. Just this is going to not end well.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I thought it was very well done, and because certainly you know, and a very nice twist of having the goofy weatherman there, who when he's revealed as a hallucination, you know, then you know that kind of makes sense, but I was completely blindsided by the Major revelation, you know, because I mean, as that scene was happening, and I was thinking like, oh, okay, so she is actually going to tell him. And okay, it didn't go so badly, and then to have it turn around and realize, oh no, that was all in her head. And guess what? Major does actually know, but in a far worse way.
Oh yes,
as you say, no, this does not look like it's going to end well at all.
And thank God that this show got renewed.
Yeah,
because this has turned into one of the nice mid-season surprises.
Yeah,
this is like the 100 type territory at this point. So.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
In fact, I think they are showing up relatively close to one another on the list here. Maybe not so much. 100 still being way higher, but as far as successful first seasons go in terms of convincing people that it's a show worthy of watching, yeah, I think we're on that path. All right, well, that is it for this week. Like I said, a little bit of a short Friday. But, Gary, what would you say about this week and kind of your thoughts on where things are going here? You see any shows coming here in the next month or so that are intriguing you?
No, but I did take a peek at the Supergirl pilot that was quasi-released this week, and that's looking promising. So
that's good. I have not gotten to it yet. But let's see. Seriously, there's... let's see what's coming up, since we have a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got time.
Yeah, so in the next month, in June, just what I have on my list here, as far as things that in the family, at least, are interested in seeing, we have showing up next week, or at this point it's already come out, The Whispers, which is kind of like everybody's worst fears about imaginary friends coming to life, or it's that kind of that episode of Star Trek, just, you know. Anyway, a show called Stitchers, which is kind of about a young... So here we go. This is on ABC Family, by the way, so this is probably something that is... we'll see how this goes. Kirsten, a young woman recruited into a covert government agency to be stitched, quote-unquote, into the minds of the recently deceased, using their memories to investigate murders and decipher mysteries that otherwise would have gone to the grave. This sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, wait, did we just talk about this?
Didn't we just finish Shy Zone?
Yeah, didn't we just talk about that?
Yeah. Well, what do you know?
Working alongside Kirsten is Cameron, a brilliant neuroscientist whose passion for the program is evident in his work. So basically Fitz from S.H.I.E.L.D. The secret program is headed by Maggie, a skilled veteran of covert operations, and includes Linus, a socially immature bioelectrical engineer and communications technician. Kirsten's roommate Camille, a gifted computer science grad student, is also recruited to use her skills to assist Kirsten.
Oh, come on!
Yes. So this is Alias meets Covert Affairs meets iZombie.
Yes.
It sounds a little like S.H.I.E.L.D. too.
Yeah. Wow, it's a little bit of everything. So let's see what that looks like, I guess. Hannibal comes back, or is back, as of the time that this hits the airwaves.
Yes.
Now, Gary, this one I'm sure that you're going to be interested in. By the time that this episode goes out, this will already be there. Sense8 starts up.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was going to ask us off record, are we going to watch this a la Daredevil or pound through it?
No, a la Daredevil, because I think even more so than Daredevil, this is going to need episodic consideration.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there is something to say to let an episode, you know, sort of marinate and you all wonder through your head where it's going to go versus watch one episode after the other and not have that time to sort of enjoy and fantasize about where the, you know, what's going to happen to each of the characters and stuff like that. I'm finding I went ahead and I'm watching Daredevil one episode a week, and I have to say, I think I'm enjoying the show better than if I had just mainlined it right through. So, I look forward to actually, like you said, giving each episode time to digest, so to speak.
Yeah, and certainly based on some of these early reviews that have been coming out, sounds like there's going to be a lot to ruminate and digest in these episodes.
Absolutely. June 12th, we have the return of Defiance. We also have the first episode
Didn't everybody die at the end of that?
No.
No?
I thought everybody
clearly did. Not.
They're just resting.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Gary, yes. June 12th.
Covert Affairs going up.
Dark Matter.
Oh, jeez. Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, see, once again, we're kind of, you know, bringing it all back here with comic book stuff.
Yeah.
June 19th is the first episode of Killjoys, which Killjoys follows a fun-loving, hard-living trio of interplanetary bounty hunters sworn to remain impartial as they chase deadly warrants throughout the Quad, a distant system on the brink of a bloody multiplanetary class war. So, Destiny of the series.
Yeah, or Cowboy Bebop teams up with the Guardians. Yes.
Guardians of the Cowboy Bebop.
Yes.
Hey, it could work. I believe that this is one of those international acquisitions. So, we have the return of The Last Ship on June 21st.
Mm.
We have on USA on June 24th, Mr. Robot, which is sounds like it should be right up Bronstum's alley. In Mr. Robot, Elliot, a cybersecurity engineer by day and vigilante hacker by night, is recruited by a mysterious underground group to destroy the firm he's paid to protect. Elliot must decide how far he'll go to expose the forces he believes are running and ruining the world. Yes, interesting. And for those who are wondering, USA has, in fact, released the first episode online early. And then a show that I heard almost nothing about, but I'm definitely intrigued in, is on June 28th, we have Humans on AMC.
Yes,
that looks very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's actually yet another case of remaking a Scandinavian show. This was actually a Swedish TV series that ran for two series and that I have seen, and is the original is quite a lot of fun, and got very quirky in its second series, which I presume this North American version will probably not go quite there, but
we'll see.
Yeah, I might, but if it lives up to the original, this should be quite interesting.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, just looking at June, those are the things that pop out at me. So there are a few things on this list that definitely I think are going to be worthy of checking out. Oh, and there's also it shows up a little bit of in a different spot on my list here, but on BBC America they're going to be running a little bit later than the release schedule on BBC. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which I don't remember what the background is of that.
It was actually a Hugo winning novel from a few years ago by Susanna. Clark, I believe is her last name. Seeing that was coming out, it was one of those books that's been sitting on my to-do list, and I've actually said, so I've now started reading it. So I hope to be caught up by the time the series premieres. But, what I've read so far, it's quite intriguing. It's sort of taking this, there's been a sort of little subgenre going on of, it's not quite steampunk stuff in terms of, taking Victorian or even in some cases going back to like Elizabethan or revolutionary times and sort of speculating about what life would have been like if magic actually existed, or if Isaac Newton, you know, all of his infamous experiments with alchemy, if those had actually been successful and he'd discovered pathways into supernatural realms. That was a Greg Keyes series about Newton's hammer. It seems like it's along those same sort of lines, and I will certainly be happy to report what I think of the book once I'm further along with it. Try and give people a sense of what the series is going to be.
Yeah, I think you have a couple of weeks before you need to worry about the show debuting here in the States.
Yes.
But yes, I think there are up to three episodes by this weekend on the BBC, so it's not that far behind, but it's a miniseries, so it's not supposed to be, you know, I don't think they're looking to advance it beyond the episodes that they're making.
No, I don't think so.
So that also holds promise that this will be maybe on like the Neverwhere type of level of adaptation. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, there does seem to be a relatively solid lineup this summer. They, you know, there are some shows that there sound a little bit dodgy, but and certainly you'll notice I didn't bring up Extant or Under the Dome or Zoo.
Yeah.
Have you seen the commercials for Zoo?
No, I haven't.
It's apparently the adaptation of a James Patterson book, which, number one, that alone should tell you that there's going to be some hilarity involved. But it's basically an entire TV series about animals in a zoo deciding to turn on humans.
Yes.
And escape and kind of attack humans.
Yes. So it's Jurassic Park without the dinosaurs.
But I look and I'm like, okay, I could see that as like a TV movie, maybe like a 2-night miniseries, but a whole season, like 10 to 13 episodes of When Animals Attack. Okay, I guess. I mean, this is probably the same people that enjoy Under the Dome, which
I just can't believe the ratings on that show.
I don't know either. I don't, because it's the same thing over and over again. That's why we stopped watching it. But anyway, yeah, there are some shows out there that are kind of quote-unquote genre, but yeah, we're not going to be bothering with, because they really aren't showing any promise. But then there are some shows that actually do look like they could be some winners. And, you know, a lot of them are kind of in these unusual distribution things. I mean, yeah, it may be difficult, but we are going to try to stick to the one episode per week for Sense8. So we'll see what we do. I think we can do it. We'll make Joe proud.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, any last thoughts then beyond that, Edmund, on your side?
Well, actually, I did feel that we did leave out one crucial detail when we were talking about Orphan Black, that yes, in addition to the main plot sort of ramping up, they also were I think to a large extent, yeah, this was kind of returning to some of that mix between the serious parts of the plot and then the more shall we say over the top entertainments that Donnie and Allison and being suburban drug dealers afforded us. I still haven't quite gotten the image of the slow motion twerking in the tighty whities out of my head.
Oh wait. I got it. I got better than that. Occasionally, I watch this show with my wife and daughter.
Yes.
Now, granted, I'm going to remind you, my daughter at this point is in high school. So, yes. Okay. It becomes a little bit less troubling than if it were a few years ago. But so we're like, oh, you know, there's not a whole lot on. Oh, hey, that Orphan Black show. Let's watch that. And it starts with the aforementioned twerking between Allison and Donnie. And it's... My wife just kind of is like, you know, she's barely paying attention and just music starts and the thing. And we're all like staring at the screen going, is this Orphan Black, right? We didn't tune into the completely wrong show. Oh, no. Okay. but yes, I know what you're going for next. We did forget this was the other infamous appearance of Ksenia Solo on our screens in the form of Cosima's online dating prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and yeah. Well, yeah. But, and whatever other role she's playing since, I mean, we know Delphine's had them under surveillance, and I'm still not completely convinced she's exactly what she says she is.
She could be whatever she wants.
Yeah. Well,
honestly.
True. Yes.
as alluring as she is, as Peggy Shippen on Turn. Wow. Yeah, I don't know how I forgot to mention that. Because it was quite memorable. Anyhow, yes, glad to have Ksenia on our TV screens, that's for sure. And frankly, it's good that she got away from Lost Girl, because there were a couple people that remarked on Facebook from our previous associations, podcast-wise, that were like, wow, wait, that's her?
Mm-hmm.
Because, Kenzie kind of did get pigeonholed into a role, and I think maybe that's why she chose to leave, is that it was like, well, no, I want to do other things, and well, these are the other things, and it's working out pretty well for everybody. But I still feel like they left the door open for Kenzie to come back on Lost Girl, and I feel like she's going to kind of have to in order to wrap everything up.
I would think, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, the only other thing that I could bring up is that as I'm waiting for the Batman Arkham Knight game to come out, I've been playing some of the other things that I've had on my PS4, and one of them is Telltale Games. You know, they do the Walking Dead kind of narrative-driven, choose-your-character-path type of games, right? Well, they have one for Game of Thrones. And I guess they just released the fourth chapter and the sixth chapter game this week. And yeah, well, you think that, you know, reading the books and watching the show, you get a good sense of just how just no one can ever win ever. Yeah, you get a completely different feeling for that when it's like, you get to play characters in this world. Here are your four choices. Yeah, none of them are good. Pick one. It's like, yeah.
I would skip Ned Stark.
Oh, no, you are like a different house.
Oh, okay.
So you're original characters, but you are interacting with the characters of the show. And what's nice is that the characters from the show are voiced by the actors and actresses.
Wow.
So, yeah, they did a really nice job of kind of giving you the feel of being in that world without interfering with the other plots. Like, you're like a character in King's Landing, and you're, in this case, playing a handmaiden to Lady Marjorie. And, you know, she's getting married to Joffrey, and then you're, you know, you're outside, and all of a sudden they're screaming because it's the wedding reception.
Yes.
And you go, oh, yeah. And not to give anything away, but the very first episode you're playing, and you're the squire to the Lord of House Forrester, which is the house that your characters are related to. And you're in this camp and you're all just like, yeah, you know, woo, Ned's, you know, like Robb Stark. Yeah. The North remembers. Hell yeah. And you're all just like, you know, talking it up. And then they pan the camera up and they show you, you know, oh, it's the twins. It's the Red Wedding. So you start as, you know, bannermen to the Starks. And it's the night of the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
So take it from there. It all goes downhill from there. And even in episode 4, it's just like you barely get a chance to like really finally do something. It's like, yeah, finally, I get to take some back. But it's like, yeah. Yeah, you do definitely get that sense of, you know, being in a very under, like, what's the word that I'm looking for? Like in on the wrong side of history, I guess, for a little while. And you have to kind of play through like, okay, what would you do if you were in like one of these houses that has to just fight to survive? And yeah, you do. It's a lot of fun. Oddly enough, you know, you would think a Game of Thrones game, it's like, oh, you know, I can't play this around the kids because, you know, obviously sexuality and all that. They left all that out, which was nice. The language is there. Oh boy, is language ever there. But, and there's, you know, very disturbing stuff that happens, but it's like, yeah, this is, you know, like a teenager could play this and probably be okay. They'd probably be able to handle the game better than watching the show. But there we are. But yeah, I've been playing through that, and that's actually been a lot of fun. So just wanted to kind of shout out to anyone who, you know, once the season's done and you're like, oh man, I've got to wait a whole nother year for the next season of Game of Thrones. Hey, you can play Game of Thrones. It'll only take you like 10 hours. Come on.
Just like the series.
That's right. Okay, well, I think we're going to go ahead and end it there. And then next week we have, you know, we have a few shows that are kind of moving towards the end of their seasons here in the next couple weeks. I know.
We're not going to have anything left to watch, John.
I just went down a whole list.
Weren't you paying attention?
No,
but,
I think.
But not for the next week or two. What will I do?
Play Game of Thrones. I just told you. Oh, no, forget it.
Yeah. Actually, I've been watching Star Trek New Voyages, so and really enjoying.
Well, there you go.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.